everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of Under Three on a Pint. We are three blokes having an above average football conversation. Joining me on the podcast today is Akshat and Po. You might be noticing a recurring trend in our episodes, which is the missing person drama of Vaishnav. I think until episode like 60 or something, Vaishnav had not missed a single episode. But now he seems to be missing quite a few of them, but we miss having Vaishnav on the podcast. It started off with a lot of banter first, that we will record an episode without Vaishnav in it. But now I've genuinely started to miss the guy, so...
Be careful what you wish for.
No, the thing is, he's legit gone missing. So, like, listeners, if you know his whereabouts, please, drop by on our Twitter social handles and give us a heads up. Tell us
okay.
If you see.
That's a very, very, very morbid plug-in, Po. Like, I do not know how to react to something like that. But anyways, we will kick this episode off without Vaishnav, while also hoping that he joins us very, very quickly, as he is studying for some insanely hard exam to be a lawyer, which I don't know what it is. but... we're going to kick things off. We're recording this on February 4th. The transfer window has slammed shut just a few days ago. And we just want to sort of go over the entire month and try to pick out some notable transfers and things that have happened over the course of the month. Of course, when I start off this episode, the first team that comes to your mind is Chelsea, and we will talk a lot about Chelsea, but there are a few other notable things here of movements of players that are worth mentioning as well. And what we want to focus on is how Chelsea have managed to spend this kind of money, what it means to the sport, what it means to the league. And I just want to kick this off by saying that this has been another crazy transfer window, and we keep saying this again and again at the end of every transfer window, saying that it's not going to get worse than this. This has to be the limit. This has to be the upper end of what is possible. But I just want to read out some stats, which is in this transfer window there was 922 million spent, which was a record for a winter transfer window, and 311 million spent on deadline day, which is another record.
That's insane.
I think it's a and I don't even think it's a winter deadline day record. I think it's an overall deadline day record, with 311 Oof. Million spent. And of course, there's just, we know who's culpable for breaking this record, and we will get to that. But
it's like that one kid who ruins the reputation of the entire class, you know?
But I just want to start off by saying that from the 922 million spent, the top 10 teams that have spent the money, 8 of them have been in the Premier League. The ninth team has been a team from Mexico, which is Tigres, and then the 10th team has been from Brazil, which is Flamengo, which have spent about 45 million cumulatively. So a major chunk of that is coming from the Premier League, and I want to just throw this to Akshat as to what we are seeing in modern day football with Premier League spending power and why other clubs are not really able to match up to that.
So, I mean, you just have to look. So, Deloitte does this thing called the Money League, where basically they evaluate the most, the richest and the most valuable clubs in football, and they release a list every year of the top 30 richest clubs in the world. 16 out of the top 30 are in the Premier League. Like, just think about that. 16 of the top 30 in the world are in the Premier League. And maybe 1 or 2 years down the line, I think it's inevitable that each and every single Premier League club is going to be, that means 20 teams are going to be the top 30 richest teams in the world. Now, that is something which is just, there is no level playing field right now. The Premier League is playing its own game. That, or that cliche of the Premier League is the real Super League is kind of true at the moment, right? And it's just the fact that the product is so valuable, and we are at a stage where the international TV revenue for the Premier League is going to surpass the domestic revenue. And I like, if you just think about that for a second, that's just insane. Like, imagine the NBA, right? National Basketball Association in the US. And people outside the US are willing to spend more than people inside the US to follow that, right? Like, we're talking about that, but a much grander scale. It's unheard of. There is no precedent. There is nothing you can compare it to. The amount of consumption we have for this league, and it just, I mean, as you said, like, the spending basically makes it even more attractive, right? And we're in a situation now, January, I mean, not even that far ago, even if you go back like 5 years, people would be like, oh, no one's going to spend in January. You never make transfers in January. It's not a good idea. And here we are, the numbers you said, I don't remember them, but those are some really, really insane numbers, right? And we did say that, yeah, okay, Chelsea are the ones, but they're not the only ones. I mean, we have to put things in perspective here. Leeds signed Weston McKennie. The fee they paid for Weston McKennie is more than all clubs in La Liga and Bundesliga combined spend in January.
Yeah.
One player which Leeds bought, Leeds are what, 17th, 16th at the table, have spent more than the two of the other three biggest leagues in the world. So it's the money, right? It's the rich owners, it's the amount of commercial revenue which is being bought, which is being brought in. And we're in this situation where almost this income disparity is just going to reach a tipping point where almost the other leagues are going to become kind of like feeders into the Premier League, you know?
Right.
And right now, the thing is that there's a flip side to this, which I think is very interesting, and we're probably going to see this play out in the next 5 years, is that when a Premier League big transfer flops, right, normally you would try to sell that player at a good, reasonable rate to another team. And I think the best example of this is Romelu Lukaku, right?
Yeah.
Teams aren't going to be able to bail the Premier League big clubs out anymore. They don't have the money to spend Romelu Lukaku money for sure, bringing him to Italy again, right? So we're going to see a lot more moves within the Premier League. We saw it already kind of
exactly
with Manchester City and Arsenal, where they just allowed Arsenal to take Gabriel Jesus and Zinchenko. Not because City didn't value those players, but because Arsenal valued it. Arsenal were able to pay City the amount of money they wanted, right? And clubs outside of England are not going to be able to do that. Because, I mean, I don't know. That whole Weston McKennie thing, I can't wrap my head around that. It's insane.
It's a very interesting trend that you brought up. Sorry, Po, just with the Romelu Lukaku transfer, I think we already saw that just a little before with Paul Pogba as well, where Paul Pogba did not perform to the heights at Manchester United and then again eventually moved on a free to Juventus because that resale value is just, they're not going to be able to match up to that. So you spend 100 million and probably you're going to get maybe 20, 30 million out of that player. What are your thoughts on the Premier League spending so far?
No, I think Akshat hit the nail on the head there. Like, you're right about the fact that in the future, Akshat, that the pulling power of the Premier League is going to make the other leagues seem like a feeder club. But the problem is when they're not able to sell those people or there are other good players in the squad who they want to replace or whose contract is going down, like who's running down. So they can't replace those players. The thing is, we got to think of it in a sense where there are two markets. Like, there's like an internal Premier League market. Like, it's sort of like that, no? Like, there's a market established within the Premier League. And then there's one external market where all the other European clubs are part of it. Like, so more and more transfers within the Premier League, you're going to see that. Like, for example, like, few years ago, there was a whole point about, like, no matter what you do, you never sell a player, a good player, to a rival club, no matter what. You either look for an overseas club or you extend the person's contract, you get him to agree to play in your club itself. But the thing is, now it's become a common factor. Like, the whole, I remember like a decade ago when Ashley Cole went to Chelsea, it was such a huge thing. Yeah, and now you can see Chelsea and Arsenal just swapping players. Like, Jorginho, for the matter of fact, they just gave him away on the last day of the transfer window when they don't have... When normally clubs would definitely, like, they wouldn't even think about doing it. So There is no other option now. Like, this is like Syria in the 90s, like when it was so common for players to go across Inter Milan to Juventus to Lazio. So they kept swapping back then, and it was a common thing in Italy. And the rest of the world used to look at it in a sense where, what the fuck are these guys doing? What the fuck are these guys doing? But like, the Premier League is on the road, like on the course for doing that.
Yeah, I mean, like, just this window, we had Trossard, we had Jorginho, as you said. We had, like, even if you go a little bit further back, you had Raheem Sterling. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Sterling is the perfect example for this. Look at the three clubs that he's played for. You would never imagine that to happen in like a decade ago.
Oh,
like,
shit, I forgot about Sterling joining Chelsea just this season. My God, there's so much that's happened after that.
So he's done the merry-go-round in the Premier League, and like, no one bats an eye about it.
And Anthony Gordon is also a really good example, you know? And that one is, I mean, there are other factors with the whole Everton thing going down, but that's the kind of move which you don't see very often happening, right? You normally, the players would stay and Everton would keep Anthony Gordon until his value increases to a very, very high level, and then maybe sell him to either a top Premier League team or a team abroad. Now, I mean, like...
And they're also in a relegation battle, and he is one of their first team players, so all the more reason why they would want to hold out at least until summer for a transfer. And it's not like they've sold him for a very high valuation, because he was valued at, what, 100 million just 6 months ago, and the transfer ended up being for 40-45 million.
Only Todd Boehly valued him at that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Chelsea were willing to pay upwards of 60 mil for him in the summer. But I think this is a different scenario altogether, no? Like, where this is like the baby throwing the toys out of the pram. Like, he created a fuss, he wanted to go. And normally, it's a fault. Like, you don't see it from the player side as well. You don't, like, bite the hand that feeds you.
But, Po, like, I think the point is more that a Premier League club was willing to give 45 million. They're able to spend 45 million in January.
Yeah, I mean, this is Newcastle United we're talking about. Yeah. Like, you're going to see more and more of this in the coming windows.
Your Mbappe for Newcastle dream will come true, right?
Yeah. When the kitty purse opens in the summer, we're all going to be shocked. We're looking back at the winter transfer window right now, like, in awe. But, like, I don't know. I can't imagine the things coming.
And if,
like,
they qualify for Champions League, then definitely.
I think so, too. Yeah, I mean, regardless, you can expect Newcastle to spend.
Another aspect to this entire Premier League spending capacity is that, you know, not so long ago, there was a clear distinction between feeder clubs and big six clubs, that when a big six club comes calling and targets a certain player from a feeder club, that transfer usually happens. And now we're seeing more and more of clubs not willing to give out to the pressure of a big six team. And the perfect example for that was Caicedo. At Brighton, and the team's Arsenal, I think Arsenal Chelsea were in for this, right? They were ready to pay what Brighton wanted, but Brighton didn't want to sell in the January transfer window because they wanted to hold the player no matter whether you're matching the valuation or not.
No, but the thing is, you're right there. Like, when did we ever see the fact, like, a club like Brighton, no offense to Brighton, no offense whatsoever, but you would never expect a club like of Brighton stature to, when somebody comes calling,
to hold down
60-70 million. Yeah, I mean, you would jump at the first opportunity to get rid of the player. Not,
and you could say that Brighton did give out to Trossard, but that was a completely different situation where the player did not want to train, did not show up, and there was a big bust up. So that is probably why, I mean, that is definitely why Brighton decided to sell Trossard. Otherwise, if there was cordial relations between the player and the club, I don't think even Trossard would have moved in this window.
No, but the thing is, even Caicedo did the same thing. Like, he put out a post on Instagram saying that, thank you, it's time for me to go. Like, I hope the fans understand all of this. He put out an Instagram post saying this. And the response Brighton gave was, okay, fine. If you don't want to, like, before you say that you're not going to train, I'm going to put you under house arrest, like, until the January transfer window ends. And then you come back. Yeah. Like, I don't care. Like, you're staying until the summer, regardless of what, like, whether you want to be here or not.
And to Brighton's credit, it's a very competitive market right now where there were other alternatives, right? So Chelsea went for Enzo at the end of the day, right? And that is another midfielder which they were going for. So they have lesser chances of going for Caicedo right now. So that's lesser opportunity for Brighton to sell him later. Arsenal as well, they were in for Caicedo. They really wanted him. But they went for Jorginho at the end and they got a separate midfielder. And that's again maybe one lesser team looking to buy Caicedo in the summer. But even then, Brighton didn't buckle. They're like, okay, fine, you know, it's okay if I don't get 70 million in the summer also. Right now, I'm not going to give you this guy. Because the thing about Brighton is they have future planning to just an incredible degree. Like an absolutely incredible degree. And they bought in Mitoma, who I think is developing a little bit ahead of schedule, how good he's been. And that is probably what the trigger was to allow Trossard to go somewhere else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But with Caicedo, they see someone who is going to take a little bit more time to replace in their pipeline. Maybe they're 1 year away from like getting someone who can perform at his level. So they're able to stamp their foot down and say that, listen, no, we draw the line over here. It's just not happening. And that's pretty amazing. And like you said, I mean, it's again the situation where 10 years back, a team like Brighton, no offense, as Poe said, not a huge club. When anyone comes knocking for 60, 70 million for your player, you let them go, right? Because that's what you
take it and run, yeah.
But here they feel empowered.
That's your business model.
Yeah, but here you feel empowered to say no because you are earning so much money from your broadcast deals, right? So you don't have to just sell your players whenever an offer comes in. So it's really interesting. And I think a byproduct of this is also the fact that a lot of these teams are able to be competitive now in the Premier League, which is making the Premier League better. Because if you look at the Premier League table right now, yes, Chelsea have been bad. Yes, Liverpool have been bad. But there are 8 and 9 teams ahead of them, right? You have to give credit to the Fulham, to the Brentford, to Brighton for the way they have been playing this season. And I hope this is going to continue. The signs are that, of course, yeah, it will continue.
Yeah. And not just about the teams that are currently in the Premier League, but also the teams that have been part of the Premier League and have enjoyed the fruit of the broadcasting revenue. Take Watford, for example. I mean, they went down and it's very, very common that championship teams, Premier League teams that go to the championship end up selling most of their notable players to any team in the Premier League. But Watford have managed to hold on to Ismail Assar, which is like very, very refreshing to see. And for the same reasons, because they are financially stable, there is a good chance of them coming back into the Premier League and they want to keep hold of their best players. So let's move ahead and actually go in detail of the big money moves that we saw. And it's pretty obvious that, I mean, Chelsea are onto this sort of rollicking behavior, and it's literally the thing of, are you a genius or a madman? We don't know yet, but we will get to know very soon with Todd Boehly and Iqbali and the amount of money that they've spent. Now Todd Boehly does say that he did not get a proper summer window because there was a lot of incoherence there with the change of managers, with the change of ownership, blah blah blah, whatever XYZ reason he wanted to give. And that's probably because of where Chelsea are placed right now on the table. If they were higher up, the story would have been completely different. But he did say for the January transfer window, they have a coherent long-term plan, which is to bring in young, hungry, and technically talented players to set the future of the club. And they've bought in, I mean, I'm just going to start naming them, literally an entire 11. They got an Enzo, which is 121 million signing, which was, of course, the highlight. And then Mudryk for 67 million, which was the entire saga with Arsenal, which we are going to touch with Poe. I just want to hear his thoughts on that. Badiashile, Fofana, Joao Felix, who's probably the most expensive loan signing in the history of loan signings. Madueke, Gusto was sent back on loan. And that, in fact, is the only player that has left Chelsea. So he joined Chelsea Jorginho. My bad. And this is all in a January transfer window where teams are struggling to make one or two maximum big money signings to not, you know, disrupt the environment and the culture of the team. But Chelsea have gone all out. Let's touch on Enzo first really quickly. I mean, 121 million signing. In the start of January, the owners had met with Benfica and Todd Boehly had proposed an 85 million transfer, which Benfica rejected because they probably knew how Todd Boehly behaves and he will pay the money when push comes to shove. And that's exactly what happened. A deadline day saga of 120 million pounds is ridiculous for Enzo. Where Chelsea did win in a sense was that Chelsea didn't want to pay up front, but Benfica wanted them to pay up front, and Chelsea managed to break it down into six installments and amortize that transfer over time, which I think is a good piece of business in terms of just the scale of the amount of money that they've paid. But man, like, I know Enzo is a promising player, but have you already felt that you've overpaid?
Thing is, there's nothing against Enzo. He's a beautiful player and he'll turn out good for Chelsea in the long run. But the fee does not justify the player that is currently there. Like, he's played, what, 26 games, 27 games for Benfica in the top flight?
Yeah.
And to get this kind of money for a person who's not even completed a full season, I know he's a World Cup winner right now and he has immense talent, but the fee does not justify the player whatsoever. But also, I think we've spoken about this multiple times before, like, we got to separate the fee from what the player is capable of and, like, not combine both these factors.
Yeah, I'm just worried about the behavior, you know, the way they've gone about doing it.
This is like history repeating itself, right, Amar? Because, like, we saw this when Roman first came to Chelsea and, like, he blew the entire market wide open. And that set a precedence for the rest of the European top five leagues and, like, the clubs, the selling clubs, I mean, like, when they started demanding exorbitant amounts of money for their, like, star talent. So, and, like, we saw the whole market get messed up, and we see the market is what it is today because to a certain extent of what Robin did, like, when he came to Chelsea. So this is kind of a repeat of that, is what I feel. Like, for example, now, like, look at this, okay? If Enzo and, like, Benfica can say, like, this dude is worth 120 million, what do you expect West Ham to say when it comes to Declan Rice, or
300 million
Brighton to say when it comes to, yeah, to comes to Caicedo in the summer? So, like, dude, you paid so and so amounts for this guy who's still green, and my player has played in the Premier League for the last 4 or 5 years and he's been a stalwart in our team. I'm going to at least expect 150 to 200 million for him. So, like, it's going to skew the market completely.
The biggest winner of the transfer, of the Enzo Fernandez transfer, was Borussia Dortmund, because they can now probably charge 700 million for Bellingham and it'll be completely justified. And, okay, yeah, I mean, Enzo, like Po said, he's a great player. Potentially, he's a really, really promising player today. But we have to put things in perspective. 6 months ago, in June, Benfica bought him for 15 million.
Yeah.
They have got over 100 million of profit from a player in 6 months. Like, not even crypto scams promise this much money in return in 6 months, man. This is insane amounts of money.
No, I think, guys, do you know who the real winner here is? Like, his first parent club from Argentina?
River Plate.
He came from Argentina,
River,
right?
Plate, yeah.
So, you said the transfer amount was 15 million when they sold him to Benfica, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, they have a 25% or 30% selling clause, like, yeah, on him. That clause would have gotten them more money in total as compared to what they initially got for him in the first place.
Yeah.
So they made shit ton of money on Enzo.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like Boehly is the man with the candy store, the best candy collection on Halloween, and all the kids just go there and scam him off whatever candy he has. I mean, the man he's just paying copious amounts of money again and again, surprising himself also, And I don't know what the future holds, and in terms of what Poe said of breaking the market open, definitely there are going to be repercussions to the way Chelsea have spent the money on all the other clubs, but it's just something that we'll have to wait and see.
I just want to say this whole thing, it doesn't sit right by me, because I know it's like very philosophical and like all big clubs do the same, blah, 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 but they don't. Let's just put this in perspective. PSG came in, broke the market with the whole Neymar, Mbappe thing. City came in, they did the same thing. This window, I mean, this year so far, Chelsea have doubled what those guys did. You know, all the oil baron jokes which we've been making for years and years and years, they have more than doubled that amount in a year. So this is unprecedented on a level, like, it's just crazy to me. And it doesn't sit right by me, because where are we going? Like, football, where is it going? Are we going to a place where it's basically just whoever is richest wins? Is it just that we need billionaires to be a good club? Is that what's going to happen?
Isn't that what it is already? Like, you put money, there's a simple science behind it. You pour money into your team, more or less, your team's likely to win. Not all the time, not 100% of the time, but it gives you the biggest chances. It gives you the biggest chances to win.
I agree with that, Bo. But my point is that, what is the difference between this and doping? Is this not at a point becoming an unfair advantage?
This is doping.
Yeah.
This is doping. This is just financially doping.
Yeah, exactly. The thing about this whole thing is like, I don't even know like where this ends, because FFP has no teeth as it is today. There are changes to FFP which we're going to get into a new episode. But like right now, there's nothing you can do, right? There's absolutely nothing a team can do to compete with this level of madness which we're seeing. I mean, the thing is, money will never guarantee a win. And for what I said about the Deloitte League and Premier League clubs being dominant in terms of raking the money in, it hasn't translated to dominance in the European scale yet, which is what gives me hope for the future, right? And yet being the key word there. But what are we going to do when suddenly no other competition exists outside of England? What are we going to do? What are we going to do when Chelsea come in and gazump, or Newcastle come in, or United under new owners come in and just are willing to spend 20 to 30 million more than Barcelona can ever spend on a player, or Real Madrid can ever spend on a player? We are reaching towards that stage, right? Like, this is, it's just the logical extension of what we've seen this window. This is not smart spending. I don't care what you say.
No.
From a footballing perspective, bringing in these many players in such a short window under a manager who doesn't seem to want all of these players at once is not smart spending. But they don't even care about it. Like, they would have, if this wasn't smart spending, they would have stopped at Mudrik. They wouldn't have spent another 120 million on Enzo, right? So, I mean, where have we reached? Like, where it's not smart spending when it comes to the performance on the pitch. And it's a gross amount of money which no one else can compete with. So, you're now in a position where you're spending a lot of money for not even, like, wanting success on the pitch. Like, what is happening over here? Like, I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Show of power. Show of power. The thing is, we know that this is an unprecedented window with insane outcome. No, like, the thing is, when you put it into perspective and think about the fact that this is only January.
Yeah.
And everyone knows there's an unspoken rule with January. Like, you don't make long-term decisions with January signings. You don't. You just don't. January is basically to fix your ongoing season, your current season.
Exactly.
Like, if you have any immediate requirements in terms due to an injured player or due to a falling out with a player, and you need to cover up, you need a backup. That's when you go into the January transfer window. Or like when you find yourself in a position where you didn't expect to be at the start of the season, say higher up in the table, you probably go out to get reinforcements in January then. But this is basically you're trying to play football manager in January within a space of 1 month.
Football manager will reject, bro. It's too football manager too realistic. FIFA
with the billionaire takeover option.
Like, FIFA with the financial takeover option. That's
exactly that.
But let's move ahead and talk about Mudrik really quickly. Just want to take Poe's thought into this. Saltiness? I know Poe is very salty, but any scars in the Mudrik transfer?
No. I learned about, like, I've experienced this in the past when a player openly quotes another club in the window, it's extremely hard to get that player in. Like, you never come out in the public and say, like, I want to go here or I want to go there. That just increases the determination of the selling club and saying, no, fuck you. And this usually never turns out to be a good thing. I know, like, Mudrik openly multiple times has stated that he wanted to go to Arsenal, but as it ended up at Chelsea, like, and like 85 million or 88 million euros for him is a big amount for a player who's barely scored like 10 to 12 goals, I think, in his career. Or yeah, maybe I'm screwing up the statistics.
I think it's like 10 goal involvements and 35 appearances or something like that.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. He looks freaking electric. Like, his first appearance was Chelsea. I think he came on in the second half. Oof, he skinned Milner, I think.
Yeah.
It was the Chelsea-Liverpool game, yeah. He completely skinned. But yeah, on the lighter side, it's Milner for the fact.
So. if Modric could pick one person who couldn't handle him in the entire Premier League, it would be Milner. I mean, Milner's a good player, but his skill set is like completely opposite to what Mudrik's skill set is, yeah. Right? So he yeah. had a field day for sure. The thing with Mudrik, what Po touched on, is absolutely right. He looks like a frightening player. Like, I am scared, like, genuinely, more than yeah. Enzo. I'm really scared of Mudrik. But you can have each and every single skill required, but the one thing which you need, which will make you a good player or an effective player, is end product. And Mudrik doesn't have proven end product at an international level right now. And there are many, many players who don't get that, no matter how good they are. This is a very stupid example in terms of a comparison, but we've seen the way Adama Traore plays. Everyone you ask him, they'll be like, oh fuck, he's unplayable at times. He's absolutely unplayable. But he's not like anywhere in his career where yeah. a big team is going to go after him, right? And yeah. I'm not saying Mudrik yeah. is at that much of a level, but my point being that you need end product. That is the final piece. And without that, you're not
but
an
Akshat,
elite player.
How many... You can only play 11 players at the end of the day. In fact, Chelsea had to kick Aubameyang out of their Champions League roster just to accommodate three of the new signings that came in out of the six.
I think they've left 75 million worth of signings away from their
yeah.
squad.
Yeah.
I've honestly lost count. If you ask me to name Chelsea's squad right now, I will not be able to tell you.
Yeah,
I will
hard,
not be
hard.
Able to
yeah.
tell you 50% of their
it's
squad.
It's nearing 30, yeah. I think, which is yeah, crazy.
No, I think they have more than 30. Wow. 33 or 34.
Wow.
In their squad, like, with the players that they already had. But, like, before you move on, Amar, like, I'd like to add on one thing to what Akshat said and to what I've been saying for the past, like, 10 minutes or so. How this, the Mudrik transfer amount, no? I'm sorry to beat on the same bush again and again, but the exorbitant amounts of money that Chelsea paid for it and Arsenal were ready to pay for him, it's insane, man. Like, you look at the fact that, like, Shakhtar, when people came calling for Mudrik, they're like, if Anthony was worth so much,
yeah.
then Mudrik is worth exactly this much. Like, so basically, you're setting a precedent for any other club in the future to say, if Mudrik was so much, my player is going to be worth like much
yeah.
more than that.
Yeah.
Like, and it's going to be increasing again and again and again. Like, if you're if you're paying nearly 100 million for a player in the Shakhtar, like in the Ukrainian Premier League, who's had like a couple seasons under him and one brilliant season, and he scored what, 5 goals in this particular season, and if you're setting a precedent for 100 million for that sort of a player, I don't know where you're going to find, like, freaking, if you're trying to buy, okay, no, I can't even give out examples now, it's insane, like my brain is fried,
bro. That was my point. Where are we going, bro? Like, where are we going? What is happening over here?
I just want to say that the biggest losers, I feel, of the way the last few transfer windows have gone is Liverpool, because that entire Moneyball approach has now just, it's fucking disappeared. What are you going to do? Liverpool were a club that was so excellent in recruitment, where they were boiling down to one player, getting them for like cut price, and those players turned out to be excellent. But now, cut to Anthony Gordon going for 45 million. And Liverpool, we know, are a team that the FSG owners, they hold their purses very tightly. They're not a club that go
Bro,
and splash around money.
I'm gonna stop saying this, bro. After they've spent 100 million on Nunes and about 40
million
on Gakpo,
that's exactly what I'm saying. They don't have a choice anymore, right, Akshat? They don't have a choice anymore. They have to do it.
I don't think so, Amar. What I think is they're ready to pay. They're ready to pay, like, regardless of the amount of money. If that player that they are, like, trying to get is right for them in the way that they see it, like, in terms of the data-driven approach that they go for, if they think that the player is the right fit, I think they go for the money, regardless of what amount it is. Like, of course, not, like, 300 million, 200 million, but, like, in a sensible manner.
I agree.
It's not that they're cash-tied.
Yeah, they're a better way of putting it is they're very, very careful in choosing what players to go for. Yeah. But once they're in for a player, they go all out for him, man. I don't think, like, the way they gazumped us for, I mean, Manchester United for Cody Gakpo, for example. I mean, there wasn't any negotiation over there from Liverpool, right? They're like, oh, okay, Manchester United are ready. This is what you negotiated. Fine, let's do the same thing, right?
By the way, Gakpo is coming close. Oh, another notable transfer which we were going to get to with Cody Gakpo. But he's coming very close to his 007 James Bond figures, which is 0 goals, 0 assists and 7 appearances.
That was the Jadon Sancho meme,
yeah,
no?
Yeah.
the internet keeps receipts. I keep receipts. And Liverpool fans, get ready.
One more game to go, by the way. One more game for Gakpo to hit those 007 figures.
Yeah. Just before we move ahead of Chelsea, there was another saga that happened with Hakim Ziyech, which I have not seen in a while now. And I mean, for people who don't know this, right, Hakim Ziyech was actually in Paris, finished the medical and was waiting in the PSG offices for the document to come through. But Chelsea, not once, not twice, but 3 times messed up the document. In the first attempt to mail, there was no document that was attached itself. They didn't sign in another one, and there was an error in the third one. And by the time everything got done, it was 11:03 p.m. and 11 o'clock, the transfer window shuts officially. And if you've not uploaded that whatever sale receipt, I don't know what the technical term is, but if you've not uploaded that, then the transfer doesn't go through. And in fact, it got to a point where Hakim Ziyech was personally messaging Todd Boehly saying, "What the fuck is this? I need this document to be sent right now," and it didn't end up happening. And that's the story that everyone knows, right? I mean, if you've gone onto social media, I'm sure you'd have come across some form of information about this. But let me tell you that it was not one deal, 2 deals collapsed with the same manner for Chelsea, with Omari Hutchinson, who was going to go out on loan from Chelsea to West Brom, had the same issue. And the championship window ends a little earlier, and they could not send those documents in time either. And the PSG representatives came out and said that it's a circus. No, it's a grade A circus. So, I mean, that's beautiful. What a way to describe what's happening at Chelsea. Just the perfect encapsulation of their entire transfer saga.
It's a stupid... I don't know if I even want to call it an error of it or if this was done on purpose, but it was stupid, man. Like, because if you're ruining your relationship with PSG, one of the only clubs in the future who can pay the amount of money for your squad players, who, by the way, you've put on 8-year contracts or 7.5-year contracts. And if they don't work out, like, you look at Chelsea's last 5 years of transfer dealings, okay, just, like, run your head through it. I'm not going to name players over here because none of them pop up in my head, because most of them did not work out to begin with. And if you think the fact that Chelsea had given them 8-year contracts or 9-year length contracts,
they're fucked.
Imagine the state of the club right now. Imagine the state of the club right now. So PSG is one of the only clubs in the international market who has the money or, like, the pulling power to pay for these so-called average or good players that Chelsea are loaded up with right now. And if they're going to ruin a relationship with PSG over Hakim Ziyech, like, okay, Chelsea are really stupid.
Yeah, relationships matter.
Just before we move on, there was something that you wanted to talk about in terms of FFP, and everyone asking the same question, like, how have Chelsea managed to spend so much money? How is that possible with the prevalent rules of stopping exactly this, right? This is why FFP was introduced.
See, I mean, the thing is that Chelsea were probably FFP compliant before the Enzo signing. After the Enzo signing, I just don't see how they are. And the way FFP works is that it's not, as people say, number of amount of money in versus amount of money out, right? It's about your balance sheet. It's about the way you do your accounting. And it's way the way you do your accounting over a 3-year period. And we so happen to be in a very particular period where 3 years back, we had the coronavirus pandemic and football was really affected. So the UEFA gave a lot of concessions out to teams. And instead of it being a 3-year period, the 18-19 seasons were basically collapsed into a single year in the FFP window, right? Now, that was necessary. It's not like they did it and it's like something which they shouldn't have done. It was absolutely necessary. Otherwise, no club in the world would have been compliant, right? But that is where Chelsea found their window to completely exploit the system. I mean, let's be fair to Chelsea. They have made a lot of money in the transfer market as well. Under the previous ownership, they were very good in getting deals. I just think back to Tammy Abraham, for example, around 40-ish million for him. They had, I mean, a lot of sales at that time. I think they sold around 200 million worth of players over a 2 or 3 year period coming before this. So that kind of allowed them to push a lot of these deals through, which you're seeing right now. But the real way that they have exploited and found a loophole in the system, which is this thing which Todd Bowley has come into the Premier League and he's like, oh, I've taught the football world something, is that they are handing out these insane 8-year contracts, right? And the way this works is amortization. We've spoken about this, but a very simple explanation is that when let's say Amar owns a club, right? And Amar wants to pay 80 million for me as a player. Now, Amar...
No, it's too much. 2 million.
but for an 80 million player, now if Amar has an FFP, like let's say an allowed amount of 50 million to spend this year, right? He's not going to put $80 million spent in this particular window. He's going to amortize it, right? So if it's a 4-year deal, he's just going to say, 20 million I'm going to spend this year, 20 million I've spent next year, 20 million I've spent a year after that. So you're stretching out the valuation of a player, the fee you've paid for a player over a longer stretch. And that is how amortization works. So he was allowed to spend just 50 million this year, but he's bought an 80 million player and yet he's totally free. Like he hasn't breached FFP and that's how amortization works. And now Todd Bowley has come in and like he scratched his chin and been like, oh, I'm gonna make this crazy new thing that instead of these idiots spreading it across just 4 or 5 years, I'm gonna spread across 8 years. So he's handed Mudrik an 8.5-year contract. He's handed Enzo an 8.5-year contract, and he's trying to spread that across. So now when Amar buys me, he's gonna spend just 10 million each year, right? And that's how he's gonna put it in his books. And it's amazing to me that he thinks that this is good business. Because you are just not.
What's the flip side to it?
The flip side to it is you're still paid that much for a player and you can spread it as thin as you want. There is going to be a point of time when you have these many people in your books. And the way football works is you don't know if a player is going to be a hit or a flop, right? And now if I have a flop, if I have a 4-year contract, 3 years into the contract, I'll sell him and I'll get like some amount of money for him. What are you going to do when you have an 8-year player who's here for 8 years? You're going to send him on loan every year after the 3rd year or what? To like keep the squad happy. And Chelsea's squad
Danny
is...
Drinkwater, they've done it before.
Yeah, but Chelsea's squad is extremely susceptible to this. Like all their past managers, they've been kicked out because of dressing room unrest. And you're getting people in 8-year contracts. You don't know what's going to happen with injuries, dude. You just don't know. Virgil van Dijk he was the best player in the world. Anyone would say he would be worth any amount of money. He's not been the same since he got injured. If someone gets injured on an 8-year contract and he's not the same, what are you going to do? Football doesn't work the way... Yes, go ahead.
One thing that you missed out on was, apart from injuries and performances, is that for 8 years, that player is still on your books for a fairly high wage. And wage, you cannot defer. You have to pay your wage bills every week, basically. And now you're getting in Enzo, you're convincing him to join from Benfica for, say, even like 200k a week. When he stops performing or when he's injured, no club is going to pick up that 200k a week contract. And Enzo is going to be like, why should I move when I'm getting paid 200k a week here compared to 80k a week somewhere else?
And Amar, the flip side is also true. You're getting in some of these players and you're let's say you get them on a reasonable wage, right? Let's say you've bought them at like 80k per week, right? If that player becomes a star player for you, he's not going to stick around for 8 years earning 80k a week. The way football works is Rashford, for example, he's going to get rewarded with a better contract. Bruno got a new contract 1 year after he came to United because he's a star player. That's how you keep players happy. You have to increase how much you're paying them. That he's not going to be able to do. And I mean, there's so many problems. One more problem I'll tell you. Every time you sack a manager, a new manager comes in, he's going to want his players to come into the squad. He's not going to want to work with the players bought by the other management, right? Now, just look at how it's gone for Potter so far. Will he turn it around? Maybe. Right now, they're suffering. Nah. If this happens next season, you think they're going to keep him? No way. They're going to get another manager in. That manager will want new players. What are you going to do then? You've already spread for 10 million for the next 10 years. What more can you do? You're not going to be able to sell these players. When you're bringing in new players, now all the clubs already hate you for the way you've been doing your transfer dealings. They're going to charge you an even higher amount, knowing that you're such idiots for spending 120 million in January. So, again, like, there are so many problems to this. Not to mention the FFP trouble, which they will eventually run into. And the one thing which I just want to tell all Chelsea fans listening is that you guys celebrated this. 5 years from now, when you're in the drain, just remember that you celebrated all this happening. And this is going to be a shit show. I can guarantee this. I've not been more confident about anything. I was not even this confident about Everton getting relegated than I am about this. So it's...
No, you know, to add to that, Akshat, you mentioned how they've amortized the length of the contract, right? But you got to show in some incomings to balance the books. And the way they're doing that is whatever players are selling, the amounts they're getting, they're showing it in that particular season when truth and fact, they're getting it amortized themselves.
Yeah. Because,
of course, everyone wants to amortize the player's value.
Yeah.
So that tricky level of accounting and this revolutionary new idea of Todd Bowley that Chelsea fans say that, whoa, this guy is like the master guru of transfer windows and all that bullshit. It's as if other clubs have not already thought
exactly
about it. It's just those clubs have outweighed the costs and the benefits and have decided to go against it.
Yeah.
And this stupid motherfucker thinks he can hand out 9-year contracts to like average players and like be the guru of the transfer window. Come on, man. This is like, he's going to be the laughing stock of the Premier League soon. I hope so, at least. Like, I pray.
I wager that by the time Enzo's contract ends, Chelsea would have at least 10 managers.
Highly possible.
But let's move ahead. I just want to quickly ask Po on Arsenal's signings with Trossard and Jorginho. Are you excited? I was very excited with the Jorginho transfer. I think it was a great piece of business.
I'm apprehensive about Jorginho, but the thing is, like I said before, no, like the January market is not to like get superstars.
Yeah.
Like, but the thing is, we found ourselves in a position where we did not expect to be at the start of the year, at the start of this season. Like, we're in a position in the league table where no.
Where
like,
is that,
Paul? Expect
in case
any...
our listeners don't know.
I'm not gonna jinx it.
How can you jinx
guys,
it if it's already happened?
guys, if you want to know, just go to pl.com or premierleague.com and search for the table and you'll find Arsenal
the
there. Okay, so no, I'm not gonna say that either, but yeah, like you, if you'd asked any fan or any executive level at the executive at the club, no one would have said that we'd be there in this position. So like, and our squad, everyone knows our squad is thin. We don't have like backup replacements for the way we want to play in certain positions that are really crucial for us. A la Thomas Partey, number 6, and like Zinchenko, we've gone out and like last season our like second half of the season completely derailed because we didn't do anything in January. for the sole reason that we didn't get our targets then, and we didn't want to spend like money for people who are not in our long-term vision. But turns out it wasn't the right decision, and you have to accept that, because towards the end of the season, we lost like continuous three games, I think, to Everton, Newcastle and Spurs, that like kicked us out of a sure shot top four finish. So I think they've learned with those mistakes like in their memory, and fine, like they went out to look at the problematic positions for midfielder, left side, center back and a winger. We needed them. We are light in those positions. And we went big, actually, like to my surprise, like yeah. for Caicedo and for like Mudryk.
Yeah.
And fine, it didn't work out. But what I'm thankful for is they made those quick decisions. Okay, fine, we didn't get our targets, but we know what kind of a profile of player we're looking for and the positions we need to fill.
Yeah, they so acted they went very swiftly.
Still did the business.
Yeah. Very, very swiftly.
They still did the business. And Trossard, I think, is a really shrewd piece of business, because like he knows the Premier League, and we've gotten him for a fee that's like Mudryk is, and he's good. He's a good player. He's not a superstar in the level of Mudryk, but he's a good alternative.
Yeah.
And Jorginho, I'm still apprehensive about that, so I'm not sure how it'll look. But the whole thing is that number six role is called the Jorginho role for a reason, and Arteta was looking at Jorginho a couple of seasons ago as well, and even at City before Rodri came in. Like City wanted to buy Jorginho, but then he went to Chelsea because of Sarri. So I hope it turns out good.
Yeah. Akshat, quickly touch up on United, Vegas and Sabitzer. On the precipice of a panic buy?
No. Necessity. Pure necessity. If you're following United's finances, we're basically... there's nothing. There is zero money left. The well is dry. We're literally buying players on a credit card right now. I mean, we're not even buying players. We have to loan players right now, because we genuinely do not have cash to spend. We can just put players on a wage bill right now. I think Ten Hag knows that Martial's fitness cannot be trusted. And after Ronaldo's departure, it's very similar to the Arsenal situation, in fact, where you just need bodies more than anything else. And since we don't have the luxury of having any money, it's just like, okay, let's just see who you can get in the loan market. Weghorst is, again, I think, an astute buy in terms of the style of play is going to be something which Ten Hag really appreciates, because he's one of those strikers who's very much
link up,
of the kind who's link up. He's going to bring others into play, which is a similar mold of a striker which Ten Hag wants. Think back to Sebastian Haller, who's another striker of his, dude? How we went for Arnautovic in the summer, very similar profile of player, but the quality, of course, he's not the best there is. And that's fine. You just got to accept that. In midfield, we've been light. The long-term injury to Christian Eriksen forced us to act. And I think getting Sabitzer on a loan is an extremely good piece of business for us. Just think of it now, right? As at the time of recording, McTominay is injured. Casemiro's been banned for 3 games for a red card.
Eriksen's injured.
Eriksen, yeah. So we're very, very light on midfield. So already I feel like within the next week or so, we're going to be so thankful that we did get Sabitzer, who is someone who, unlike Weghorst, I do think Sabitzer is quality. It's a matter of how quickly he can adapt, which I think he would. He does. Again, it's a profile of player or profile of midfielder which suits our style of play really well. So I'm happy. I mean, with the amount of limited finances we have, we've made a good... like two good deals, like nothing great, but two good deals.
What really impressed me about Sabitzer was it was a very reactionary signing because of Eriksen's injury, which was a horrible challenge, by the way. I think as soon as they assessed the extent to his injury, the seriousness of his injury, they realized that they're probably going to need a midfielder, and Sabitzer is a quality player. So, very, very swift and quick action from them. We did see Cancelo move, and I think we should touch this on another episode on like Manchester City's approach to this entire transfer, because Cancelo, no matter what you say, is a very vital part of the way Pep Guardiola sets his team up, and they are still competing for the Premier League and the Champions League, and losing a player of that magnitude just for a bust-up that could have probably been resolved behind closed doors. We don't know. We'll touch upon that. But Bayern made two very good loan signings in Daily Blind and Joao Cancelo.
Oh, they got Daily Blind?
Yeah, they did.
From Ajax.
No, but Daily Blind wasn't a loan deal, Amar. I think Daily Blind terminated his contract with Ajax and he went to Bayern on a free.
On a free, okay.
Yeah. I think it's a good deal. Bayern have probably been admirers. They have right back has been an issue for Bayern Munich for many, many years now, actually. Benjamin Pavard, like, we are used to seeing him play right back because of the World Cup and whatnot, but he is actually more of a right-sided center back than a right back. So it's a good deal for Bayern. I think it probably could be made permanent, but I respect Pep Guardiola. It's that classic that no one's bigger than the team and he has to stamp authority. He hasn't been happy with the standards being set by Man City this season in training, and he's talked about that a lot in his press conferences. And I think this signing is just Guardiola stamping that authority on the team that, listen, if you're not going to give your all, if you don't want to be here, then it's better for both of us if you just leave. And it's a problem position for City, considering they sold Zinchenko as well. Right now, they don't really have a natural
probably
left back.
Nathan Ake.
Yeah, probably Nathan Ake and that kid, Rico Henry, Rico Lewis? Rico Lewis, I think his name is.
Lewis.
Yeah, those are probably the only two left backs they have, which isn't going to wow anyone, I guess.
Ideal, yeah.
Yeah, it's not ideal for sure. But, I'm not going to sit here and act like I know the dressing room dynamics of City better than Pep does. Because he's the man, right? So I think it is a good decision for both, for every party involved at this point.
Yeah. Quickly moving ahead, Depay moved from Barcelona to Atletico for $3 million, which I thought was a great piece of business for Atleti. And finally, Antoine Griezmann is now a permanent Atletico Madrid player. So he can probably come on a little earlier than the 60th minute and maybe find himself on the starting team sheet also, which was unfathomable probably a few months ago. Let me just quickly brief on this Griezmann transfer thing, right? Like $120 million was paid from Barcelona to Atletico Madrid in 2019. It's 2023 now. In those 4 years where Griezmann was a Barcelona player, 2 years have been on loan to Atletico Madrid, where there was a clause in his contract that said the loan deal is going to become permanent for $40 million. If he's played more than 45 minutes in 50% of his matches or 50% of his appearances, if he's fit. So that's why Griezmann would always come on in the 60th minute, in case listeners were wondering. Now, Barcelona have settled, even though Griezmann has played more than 45 minutes in 50% of his appearances, and they were supposed to receive 40 million, Barcelona have settled for 20 million because of just how badly fucked they are in their finances right now. So yeah,
they had to get his wages off their books somehow, right? Yeah, so they're like, yeah, screw it. Give us, you take discount, you please. I don't want to pay his wages anymore.
Like, aap hi bol do kitna dena hai. Oh man, but I feel good for Griezmann because he had a killer World Cup for France, right? And we mentioned about this on our previous episodes when we were covering the World Cup. Like, he just looked like a revitalized player. And it was a shame that he was going under the radar completely at club level. But he's gone back to his roots now, and hopefully we see the Griezmann of old. But man, Barcelona really need to figure their shit out.
I mean, yeah, they are what Chelsea will be 5-10 years from now. It's stupid.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. It's stupid spending and they're paying for it. But I mean, to their credit, they have turned things around ever since the new... At least on the transfer side, they've turned things around because they've made some astute signings. They are top of the La Liga right now. I think Real Madrid are in a little bit of a rebuilding phase. And you know the way La Liga works, right? It's just three teams just circling around. It's either Atletico or Barca or Real. So when two of them have an off year, one of them can capitalize. I think that's what's happening with Barca right now. But credit to them. They're playing better on the pitch. So yeah, let's see.
Yeah, on the pitch, Xavi's turned it around. I think they've hit the 50-point mark as well, like at halfway point. So it's...
Positive signs.
It's like... Yeah, those are positive signs. But like in the administration side, they're truly fucked.
They are
man.
Fucked.
Like,
yeah.
Massively.
But also, I just want to add that La Liga is poor. I'm not talking about the standard of La Liga. Like, they are, like, financially poor. All the other teams are not able to really make any signings, and they're all struggling right now. So, La Liga is a weaker league than it has been any time in, like, the past 15 years. Which is why Barcelona's dominance in La Liga just didn't translate whatsoever when it came to the Champions League. And now we'll see, you know, they one of the most I have not anticipated a tie. A Europa League tie as much as I'm anticipating this United-Barca. I think it's going to be absolutely epic. So, yeah, I think we'll get a better idea of where Barcelona truly are in those two fixtures.
Nice. Any closing points before I end this episode?
I want to ask you, bro. I want to poke the bear a little bit over here.
Dude, come on.
What do you think of Sean Dyche's return to the Premier League? A glorious 1-0 Sean Dyche.
Okay.
30% possession, taking away 3 points against a top team. Couldn't have been more Sean Dyche than this. What do you think, bro?
And the goal that they scored, man. Dwight McNeil corner to a Tarkowski header. It's Burnley, yes, all over again.
It had to be Tarkowski, na? No, the thing is, I read this tweet, okay? It's like Sean Dyche back in the Premier League finding BLM players to play in the midfield. It's over for the rest of the teams. It's over. It's truly over. He's got them running up and down for their lives, man. I mean, admirable in a sense, but everyone knows my opinion on Burnley and Sean Dyche.
Which is?
Come on, man. Shite. Utter shite. I don't like them. It's no hidden secret. I don't like the way they play football. And the whole the way he puts it out, like saying that they're the people's club and all that for matter. I know, like, the thing is, I'm getting off track here, but I think Everton and Sean Dyche are the perfect pairing, because, like, Everton is supposed to be the people's club, and Sean Dyche markets himself as, like, a manager who can
spaw
on pennies right now. And yeah, for the people. And the whole thing with Mushiri and how Usmanov, they had another like owner called Usmanov, and then there was a falling out, and Everton turns out they don't have any money left right now. It's like the perfect marriage now. Apparently, you know, I heard this on another podcast. Burnley would marketed the whole people's club to such an extent that they'd never travel to away games via, like, a flight, you know. They'd always take the train.
Yeah.
And Sean Dyche would ensure that there's no separate coach booked for them, like, in the train. Like, so they had to sit amongst, like, with the people, say their high P's and Q's, like, be very well-mannered.
Yeah.
And he thrives on this whole, like, I'm the humble guy who makes, like, for a Premier League club and his players to act in such a way, we're the underdogs. Like, truly, that underdog mentality has been driven into any Sean Dyche's team, and I think it fit perfectly for an Everton, but I still can't stand them, man. It just gets on my nerves.
He's banned snoods and hats, apparently, from
I mean, freaking doing bleep tests. He and, like, you've seen the images, like, the guy is running
shouting,
their asses off. Yeah, and there's an image where he's, like, laughing his ass off because, like, there's a player on the ground, like, clutching his, like, heart and saying, like, oh fuck, I'm, like, clutching his lungs, I can't breathe kind of photo, and this guy's just laughing his ass off in the background. Like, wow, this guy's a menace.
I saw one Everton fan tweet that I'm really happy with Sean Dyche's appointment, because best case scenario is that we stay up because of him, and worst case scenario is that if we go down, at least our players suffer, and that's good enough for me. I just want to see that, like, this is one really funny tweet I saw. I just want to piss. So there are basically two quotes, okay, after the game. One is an Arteta quote and one is a Sean Dyche quote. So the Arteta quote is, for me, there are three main values. One is respect, second is commitment, and the other one is passion. If one of those three don't exist, you should not be anywhere near this football club. And then there's the Sean Dyche quote, which is, kick it in the net. It's not rocket science. And I think that just sums up both the managers perfectly.
Yeah. I saw that tweet too, and Akshat, like, those tweets are like exactly true. Okay, but the thing is, the time that they were told is basically when both the managers were appointed. Like, so Arteta, when he was appointed, that was his quote, and when Sean Dyche was appointed, he's like, basically, this is like, because Everton have scored the least number of goals in the Premier League. I think they've only scored 15 goals, and there are only two players in their team who scored more than one goal. Okay, so. This is like in reaction to that. Like, it's not rocket science. Just kick it in the fucking net.
He's a legend, man. He's a legend.
Nice. Nice. I'm excited to see Sean Dyche. Okay. That comes to the end of our episode. Thank you, listeners, for getting this far. Do let us know your thoughts. You can reach out to us on social media at any time. Our Twitter is Pandit3ondapint. Our Instagram is also Pandit3ondapint. And we hope to catch you very soon again. Till then, bye-bye.
And if someone can tell Vaishnav's whereabouts, it'll be very helpful.